Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, April 19th, 2011, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. With the moon sitting at galactic degree in Scorpio tonight, it's the perfect timing for unlocking secrets. We're devoting our whole show this evening to the world's foremost authority on crop circles, Mr. Colin Andrews. He's an internationally best-selling author who has advised world leaders on the subject, led the world's largest crop circle surveillance project, Operation Blackbird, and has amassed the world's largest database on the phenomenon. His presentation tonight will be complete with pictures that you can view by going to starseedhotline.com/crop circles. And I've also referenced these website addresses in the comments box on our main show page, but if you can't find that, it's on the right-hand side, kind of towards the bottom. Make sure you write them down. They'll also be in the chat room. That's starseedhotline.com/crop circles. Later in his talk, there's another page on his website, www.colinandrews, that's C-O-L-I-N, Andrews, A-N-D-R-E-W-S, .net/special-page.html. And he'll be referencing that with exclusive information for our Starseed listeners that has not been publicly released before. Like I said, those web addresses are in the comment box, and you're going to want to go there while you're listening to Colin because there's pictures to go along with what he's saying. It'll be great. We are truly honored to have Colin with us tonight. We'd like to thank Sierra and Purple Sage for hosting the chat room and switchboard. And if you have a question or comment, the call-in number is 917-889-8292. Then press 1 so we know you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/starseed-radio-academy. As always, we ask you to be brief, and tonight, please, only questions and comments on crop circles. If you haven't visited our main site yet, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. That's .ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. You may notice that the format of our show pages on Blog Talk has changed, and while there are some cool new features, it may take a little getting used to. I still have to upload a bunch of pictures for each past show because I don't think we need to see my pictures so shockingly huge for every episode. I'll be working on that over this next week. We'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. We also want you to know that we have so many requests for our Starseed confirmation service, which we call a Stage 1 reading, that there could be up to a two-week wait. With a Stage 1 reading, you'll get your natal and progress charts and an MP3 of your reading, pointing out and explaining your star markings if you have them. Our Stage 2 readings, which are a one-on-one phone consultation, do get priority and include the Starseed confirmation. Both Lavendar and I are available for Starseed confirmation and personal consultation. And don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so don't miss out. And now, it is my great pleasure and honor to introduce my co-host, Lavendar.
Hello, Ariel, and to all of our listeners. What a great show we're going to have tonight. I am so excited. The way it happened, I was looking at the crop circle of June 1, 2009, talking about the crop circle that's going to be on the new moon this June, and all of a sudden I said, I've just got to call Catherine because, you know, she needs this information. So I called Catherine, and she said, well, you ought to have Colin on the show. And I said, you think he'd come on? And she said, well, I think so. I said, well, ask him. And so that's how Colin came to be on our show tonight, was because of Catherine. So is he online now? Has he come online?
He sure has.
Okay, Colin.
All right.
Nice to be with you.
Hello.
Good
Thank
evening.
You so much, Colin, for taking the time to share with us your experiences. And, you know, I had about an hour and a half session with you the other day and was talking about your star markings, and to let everyone know, he is so fully packed of star markings in his chart, which you know. So it was a very interesting and wonderful time that we had, and I could tell that he's one of those pioneers that's really here to do the work. With so many 26-degree planets, it just really resonated with me the entire time that I was talking with you, Colin.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you. So, Colin, why don't we start with, you know, I don't think I know about your first experience, the first time you saw a crop circle. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, certainly. Let me just say there very briefly, it is truly a pleasure to be with you all this evening. I've kind of in somewhat anticipating that this will be a different kind of show interaction than any I've probably taken part in. So I'm really pleased to be with you this evening. Well, what happened is, as a senior regional officer, that is a regional officer in local government in Great Britain, during July 1983, I was on my way to a meeting, and I was driving alone. I was on high ground at that moment, about 30 miles from Stonehenge in central southern England, and I just took a momentary glance to my left to enjoy the view. In fact, it was a kind of an amphitheater, a valley down below the vehicle on my left-hand side. And it was no more than half a second. And what I saw in that half a second, literally, movies are made of. I mean, it changed my life, literally. I had not seen anything like it before. There were five circles forming a cross, a large circle in the center. And they looked to be roughly positioned north, south, west, east, approximately so. And I kind of took a second glance and pulled the vehicle in as soon as I could. I was very late for my meeting. I remember that day. I actually walked into it. So intrigued me. I could see no tracks from the high ground that I was on, and no tracks in or out of this virgin golden wheat field. And I made my way slowly but surely. It was a little further than it looked from the vehicle into the field. And when you were kind of down the bottom of the hill, it was on the horizontal, so it was harder to see when I was on the flatter ground at the bottom of the valley. But I did eventually make it to the circles, and it was literally life-changing. I saw the only tracks in the field were now my own, having made my way there. I stood there in awe. It felt very, very much like as if I was in a cathedral. A spiritual center. There was a sense or atmosphere about it. I stood there. It was very quiet. It was a sunny day. And I could hear a kind of ticking sound, which took me just a few moments to realize, to discover what that sound was. And what it actually was were the many thousands of plants that were spiraled and semi-woven onto the ground. They were moving, and they were attempting to lift back up. They were kind of untangling and just marginally moving enough to make a sound, and multiplied, of course, by the many thousands of plants there. So This was the first experience, and it, of course, had me fascinated from the beginning of what was it that had been there seemingly not too many minutes or so before I arrived, because after all, it was still moving. I mean, the plants were still trying to adjust to their new position. So that was the beginning, Lavendar, and literally, as you know, I'm talking to you now, nearly 30 years later, having moved my country, my marriage having disintegrated as a result primarily of the work and the disruption. My family are now living 5,000 miles away from me, and I'm not saying this for any pats on the back. I'm literally saying that there is always, I think, a cost to bear when your inner senses suddenly focus you on something which is so meaningful that you cannot leave it alone. And so that was the beginning.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't leave it alone, because through all of your work, other people have been able to experience and be guided through the crop circles. Can you tell us a little bit about what happens to some of the people that go in these crop circles? What are some of the experiences that you've heard about with people?
There are many. I mean, what is so unique and very special about this mystery is that it does attract a whole gambit of individuals. I was there as a regional government official, as an engineer. Others would arrive and did over the days and weeks that followed. I returned many times, and of course I've been in probably 2,500 or more since. And you know, there's everybody there. Spiritual leaders, there are dowsers, there are skeptics, there are scientists, there are religious leaders and native peoples. And people's lives have been changed. There is no question. I am not alone in that report. There are strange anomalies, obviously. There are what I think most might call paranormal experiences that people report, and I've had some myself that again has kept me on this path. Some of the discoveries are not always palatable. They're not always easy to take when you discover that you've spent sometimes days or weeks or even more and even longer on a simple crop circle that ultimately turns out to be made by somebody. When you see that kind of conclusive evidence, it can be shattering. I mean, it changed the direction of my first co-author, Pat Delgado, who with me for many years were researching this, until the Doug and Dave, two elderly men, stepped forward in 1990 to say that they had made all of them. Well, that's a separate conversation, and perhaps we will or won't have that. But Pat was absolutely shattered by it. We had young people in particular, and this is a very important point. This is doing things to people, and it is affecting people, and it is at the profound spiritual level. And so this becomes a spiritual experience, which is fine as long as you're dealing with truth. But if you start mixing it and you're being deceived, and in other words, you've been deceived into a spiritual position, that is very dangerous. It's very damaging. And Pat had a phone call from a 16-year-old, if I presume to remember, 14, 15, 16-year-old young lad who had a lot of troubles in at his home, in his life, kicked out of school here and there, a very troubled young man who had suddenly found something that he put his heart into. He was in touch with Pat regularly, just asking for details. And Pat, you know, as myself, got a lot of time for young people and for educating people about this. And then this young man, on this particular day, following the revelation of Doug and Dave saying that they had made them, he was turned upside down. And Pat could not take it. He said, you know, this is what this has done. Look at the damage this has done. And he left the research that day. And so it's not all good. It changes people mostly for the good. If you stay there looking for the truth in yourself and in what you're dealing with, be honest with yourself about what you find. It hasn't always made me popular to speak that truth, but I'm only here myself because I don't need convincing. There's something of profound importance, and perhaps we'll get to some of that as our 2 hours progresses.
Yes, I would like for you, if you would, share with us what you shared with me the other day about when you were 5 years old.
This really had been very confidential and retained within my family, my close family, right up until less than 2 years ago. I actually was in the shower. This is exactly as it happened. And something in my head told me that this was a time I had to speak this. And within days, other people were telling me, other scientists and other people involved in other avenues of research, and this one too. I even spoke to somebody I cannot discuss at a government level in this country, who was also saying that for some strange reason they felt the time had come to reveal certain things that they had experienced. Well, this was all kind of very odd that, you know, like throwing a switch, these individuals are stepping forward and saying things, as I was about to say, and I will share with you now, that I had kept secret. And I can tell you first, before I disclose that, is that why I kept it secret was that there are a number of reasons, but the main one was that I felt, in the guidance that I thought I was getting and have always actually felt I was getting internally, in traveling this extraordinary journey, was that I must, during the early part of this investigation, which remember was now nearly 30 years ago, must try and deal with this, research it and communicate it in a scientific manner. And this was done for credibility reasons, to try and shift the engineering, the social engineering, which had been deliberately contain this kind of thinking. And so that I chose not to speak about what had happened to me at all. And so 2 years ago, I decided at a conference in Washington, D.C., with the Nick Pope, the former head of the UFO desk for the Ministry of Defense in Great Britain. He was present. Steve Bassett, who heads the Paradigm Shift Organization, who are looking, trying to encourage the U.S. government to release UFO files, etc. There's a large audience there. And so what happened was this, and this is what I shared, was when I was 5 years old, I was asleep and had the feeling that it felt very much as if, with my eyes closed, I was in a vehicle moving over the top at speed of a humpback bridge or on a ride at the fun fair, you know, the carnival. It felt like I was being pulled out of myself. And I remember it was an extraordinary feeling, then my solar plexus. And suddenly I was floating. And I was up looking down at my sister and my younger brother in the house, and floated towards the wall at the back of the house, at the back of our home, at a place called Enemalamain. People might be listening from there now, close to Stonehenge. There was a field. And I remembered this happened twice to me, and I always put it down as a dream, until Dr. Jim Harder at University California, then in California there, at I've just forgotten the name of the university, but anyway, down in California there, the big university, I can't remember its name, he had asked if I would consider being regressed, because he was part of the Operation Blue Book with Professor Hynek, looking at the UFO reports in the United States for the U.S. government. And they had, during that period of research, believed that they had discovered that second marriages of the kind that they thought I now had with Cynthia here in Connecticut were organized, were arranged by extraterrestrials. And he believed that this was the match they were looking at with myself and Cynthia, and would I consider being regressed had anything ever happened to me? Well, I shared with him two what I considered were dreams, and I was regressed. I thought for my recollection was I thought for probably 10 minutes, but my wife with Professor Harder and his wife were all present at the same time. And it was, in fact, for 45 minutes. And during that time, a lot of very strange things happened, literally happened. I was given different recollections, which were later checked out by a live film crew that came with me back to England to check these details out. And during the regression, I went through that whole thing of feeling in my stomach, lifting up and floating in the room. And then it continued. I went through the wall. In a kind of a what seemed to be a dematerialization, it was just as if it wasn't there. And I went out into the field horizontally towards a very bright white light in the field at the back of our house. And it's weird. It kind of still affects me. It's very strange. I was going towards the white light. And not in my own control at all. I was being taken there. There was no part of it that felt as if it was something that I was doing. And as I approached the bright light, it was getting brighter, of course, and there were two military individuals. I always remember very clearly the uniforms, and they were United States military people who were extremely serious-faced. They was one either side of an opening. It looked like a graying area in the light, and they were just extremely serious. That these guys were focused. That's that's what I would just say about their expression. And as I went past them, one on either side of me, into the light, everything changed, and now I'm inside of something. And it was more orange, it was much more easy, it was much more pleasant as far as surroundings were concerned and the illumination level. And I was again maneuvered. I rotated slightly clockwise and brought down very slowly onto a single piece, like it looked like an aluminum surface. And as I was dropped onto that surface, facing me, looking through my feet, as I was now horizontally, as if I were back in bed, but I was on this plinth, and looking at a being with, he looked somewhat Asian eyes. They were a little larger than human eyes, but they were not very large. They were not the greys as we have now gotten to describe them. And immediately and telepathically in my head, this used to make me very emotional when I said this to my family, but I'm able to deal with this now without kind of getting too emotional. But they said, well, this being said to me in my head, we are really, truly sorry to be doing this, but this is for a future time. And this was the beginning now. It was doing something through my belly button, through my navel. They're doing all kinds of different things. And through questions and answers that Dr. Harder was putting through me to the extraterrestrials, and I should have said something before I started this description, that Dr. Harder encouraging me to do something actually I didn't particularly want to do was the regression, and he had set it up so that I sat in a comfortable seat, the one I usually sit in my home, and to maneuver my thumb to say no, my small finger to say yes, and my middle finger that I was unsure. And so he said, I'm going to put you through, directly in contact and through, an extraterrestrial species. And that is what happened. I did not believe that anybody would be able ever to regress me, because I didn't particularly want to be regressed. And yet I was put into that state so quickly. My wife had not even put the kettle on for everybody to have a cup of tea. She was doing so. And when she came back in the room, I was out. But the information that was relayed through that 45-minute period was then later checked as much as it could be. We flew back to England. I felt so strongly about it because it changed everything for me. These two dreams that I had now appeared to fit a different, whole different situation. It put me into a different place in my work, I felt. So we went back, and I had a film crew with me and my family, my daughter and my brother, his wife and children, and Cynthia. And we made our way around and into the field where behind my home. And the first thing that I walked straight to this place. I mean, it was just like on a guided kind of mission, as it were. I walked into this place at the field where the light was. And right there, to this day, anybody who's listening to the program will know this. Anybody flying over it can see it and photograph it, as I have done since this time. There is a perfect narrow ring, a perfect ring, about 30 feet in diameter, that is still visible, and still very visible, growing, grass that's growing darker green in that perfect ring at exactly where the white light was that I went into. And I was then given, during this regression period, information about an oak tree and two plant species that would be found at the base of it, to the back of the field behind where the white light was. And we went from the ring that is still growing there to the trees. There was a wooded area at the edge of the field, and this was in January, so the leaves were off the trees when we flew back over there. And hanging on this one tree, and it was only this one tree, all of the others were different species, this one tree had one or two brown leaves still hanging on, oak leaves. And this was the oak tree I was told would be there during the regression. This is what the ET was telling me through the regression, and that these two species of plants would be found at the base, by which biologists would be able to measure the overall health of the planet through these three plants in this one place. And there were many other things, Lavendar, that, somewhat more personal, that even told me that Cynthia's father was going to pass away and would work with us from another place. It was an extraordinary situation, and that is something that I kept to myself for, 30 years or more. More than 30 years, 40, 45 years.
Oh goodness, what a revelation. And it's all about timing. The timing of it was because it needed to be part of your story now. So I'm so glad that you have shared that with us. And have you been back there recently? Have you been back to that spot since then?
Yes, we do. We go back, not every year that we go over, but we do go back. It feels now that I should. Cynthia and I think it was about 2 years after we flew back following the regression, through 2 years later, we were over there doing other research in England, and we decided we would go out to Enam Alamein and to the ring, and we stood in the center of the ring, leaning on one another's backs. It was one night. Nobody knew we were there. And we just meditated, and we were both looking up into the sky and just spending quiet time. And out of nowhere came a white light, a small white light. Initially, Cynthia kind of just, she didn't speak. We didn't talk to one another. She just kind of dug her elbow into my back as if, could you see that? And we both looked at what we thought was a satellite. It was going fairly quickly, a little brighter than satellites that you see quite regularly. And then it stopped. And then it did all kinds of maneuvers directly above us. And we attempted to interact with it, which did not progress to anything more than it moved away again back in the direction it had come. So... We did. That was a real an experience that we both had. That's the only experience that we've had there in that particular place since then. But the plants are growing, and it's odd because whilst I haven't been given a lot of information related to this one event, there's many more things going on, but I've not felt, I've really just not felt as if the second switch has been thrown, that there's, I guess it's because nobody has stepped forward to say, I'm the biologist, I'm the geologist, I'm the guy that will now take that research on that you've been given the placement of, because I am not the I am not a biologist. I'm an electrical engineer. I mean, I could make some phone calls and pull people to that place. Anybody listening now that feels that it's their calling to look at these plants and to research the health of these plants and see where the correlations are related to the general deterioration that unfortunately is still happening in these support systems of our planet. And so that's my long way around of saying that I've actually personally not taken it any further. Many other things are happening, but that is now out in the open, and we'll see where it goes.
Oh, wow. You know, I was reading in the UFO magazine, which there's just a lovely, lovely article that you did in the UFO magazine, and you were talking about a security alarm system going off at 4:15 a.m. Can you tell us the significance of that?
Yes, and this is another one of the these strange paranormal kind of experiences. There is a lot to be said about it, but I'll try and keep it fairly concise. This was back in, I believe, 1986. I had just returned from a circle that had been discovered by a police officer, which had a ring around it, and he had discovered it north of my town by probably 50 or 60 miles. It had a pathway, and this was one that was very different to anything we had seen before. It had a single pathway, a straight line, in other words, coming out of the circle, cutting through the ring around that circle, looking a little bit like Saturn, you know, as a design, very simple design. And at the end of the pathway, the police sergeant had stood there and had gone and got the farmer. He was taken by this dish-shaped hole in the field where the soil was missing. It was like an ice cream scoop, a larger one, about a foot across, you know, like a warm spoon that has taken ice cream out of its container. It was that kind of smooth surface, and the soil was missing, but there was a stone that had fallen from the edge down into the bottom of the hole. And I took this stone for analysis back to my home in Andover, to the south of that place, a place called Wantage. And I locked it up in the office, which it was an office that was purpose-built for this research. It had the computers working there. It had already the largest database in the world at that time in there. And I locked it up. I have a British patent where I designed an intruder alarm system that's used in many places now. And so I say that not for a name drop. I say it for a reason, because I know how the circuitry works. I invented it. And so I turned this alarm system in. The infrared was detecting for, you know, to make sure that people weren't going to break in. And we had a microwave and a radar backup on that intruder system that automatically called the police if anybody should break in as an intruder. Well, what happened that early hours of that morning at 4:15, precisely 4:15, was that the intruder alarm activated. And this it had not done before, only if somebody should have come late home and opened a gate or banged the door or things like this. There were not false alarms as such. So I immediately jumped out of bed, of course, and my first wife, you know, was woken, and my daughter too. The neighbors were woken. When the lights went on, the police were called. And I went out there, and there was nothing to be found. There was nothing in that room other than that the detecting system had activated because it had sensed a warm area in the room that had moved over what we would call seven zones. In other words, something similar to a human being had moved across the room, that research room, where the stone was, that came from that crop circle, and its movement had been sensed on infrared and equated to a human being. And so, therefore, it did what it was designed to do. But then it did it 14 times in, actually, that's not true. It was 12 times in the 14 days. It called the police automatically. It then started activating on radar, on this, all the backups, and it did more than that. It, the clocks in the house stopped at exactly 4:15 too. And I had the sense, I was actually getting into a semi kind of panicking kind of mode with this, because here's me, the guy that, you know, designed the circuitry, cannot figure this out at all. And this particular night, which was when it stopped, and I think the reasons are what I'm about to tell you, I had the sense the last several days that something else was in our house, that something was actually watching me. That's the sense that I got. I never saw anything. Nothing like that, but I got the sense there was something there, like poltergeist or something. And I, as I had done several times towards the end of this 12-night period when we were all losing sleep and getting somewhat anxious about all this, I unlocked it. I left my bedroom. I asked my wife to keep a general eye open in case that there was somebody around, although that had not been the case on any of those other occasions. Everything was secure. I unlocked the room. I went in. I sat down, and I had the circuit out again of the system, trying to figure out what in the world is happening. And I looked at a large map that was on the wall in the office, where I had placed pins of where the crop circles were appearing over those years. And I would put, for example, yellow pins for 1 year and blue for another and green for the next. And slowly but surely, a pattern was appearing. As the designs were being reported in central southern England, the pins were going in. And they would, there might be one to the left, and then the next report would be 400 miles away or so to the right, you know. And so it's appeared to be random if you only looked at 1 year's conglomeration of reports. But now, this night, when I'm sat there figuring out what's happening here, I'm looking at an overall layout which formed an equilateral triangle. In other words, everything that had appeared inside that area formed a precise equilateral triangle, each leg of which, in other words, from the three ancient towns that they formed that equilateral triangle, within which all of the signs appeared, between each of those towns was a distance on a straight line of that triangle of the exact time that the clocks went off, the alarms went off, of 4:15, which was 41.5 miles down each leg. And the day that I discovered that, the alarms stopped. It was as if, what an extraordinary, intricate, bizarre way of drawing my attention to a geometry, not only just a geometry as an individual circle, crop circle, but a geometry in the layout of all of the circles in central southern England. And it was then later, and perhaps we talked separately, Lavandar, about another bizarre experience that happened both to Cynthia and I at the same time, which gave us another piece of information that the alarm systems had not given us, which is really now why I think we know what a very key geometry is in this research.
Wow. Oh, I know our listeners are just absolutely just hanging on by their fingernails to just keep listening and tracking everything that you're saying. This is just an awesome, awesome story.
Yes.
How about telling us a little bit about the Nordic sighting and the police sergeant?
Oh, yes. Actually, on that special page that we put together, if any of your listeners have that up on the internet, you scroll down that page you will see, you'll come across a sketch that has been made for me by Wayne Mason, an artist, and it's a very, as close as can be gotten to what that police sergeant saw. All of these reports are important in their own way. What happened was that the police sergeant was returning from the police station in Wiltshire, in that same general area where I lived, and he was just about to approach Silbury Hill, which is the largest man-made pyramid mound, soil mound, in Europe, one of the largest in the world. And it stands out very clearly. It's a wonderful sight to see as you drive along the A4 there in Wiltshire. And this is a route that he took every day on his way home. And as he approached, this was at just after 5 o'clock in the morning, so this was very early light. The sun wasn't up, but it was getting light, and you could see around you. And he looked to his right in a field where he knew there was a crop circle, and there often are in that particular field. He was well aware of it. The police are very well informed on, you know, what's where because of the number of people that are traveling there to see them. So they know where the vehicles park and, you know, what people are up to. He knew there was a design there, but what he didn't expect was what he saw. And he thought initially three exceptionally tall people is what he thought. And they were all in white, which stood out. They were not that close to one another, but in a general cluster on the side of the hill, very close to where he knew the crop design was. This was a Mayan headdress design. And he got closer, and he could see that these were exceptionally tall, but they all looked identical. They were long blonde hair in silvery white, tightish fitting outfits with hoods that had been dropped down to the back of their shoulders. They were not up over their heads. And he stopped his vehicle, his police vehicle, and he walked across the highway. I've since been there myself, and in fact flew over there shortly after this to look at this a little more closely because of its possible significance. And he shouted out to them, and they appeared to be completely oblivious to him being there. So he walked across the road. He found his way through some barbed wire onto the edge of the field, but he felt anxious. These were clearly unusual. And he shouted again. There was a shimmering of the light was shimmering around the area that they were all within. The plants were moving also. And he said that they suddenly were aware of him, and they looked around. And as they looked at him and their focus was on him, the shimmering of the plants suddenly took off towards him. So it was as if their energy field, which was actually causing the plants to ripple with their concentration, moved directly through the plants to him. And as it touched him, as it arrived at where he was stood, he had a sudden headache, and a very severe headache, which he continued to have for the rest of the day. But he said that he looked around to see where he should get himself out of the field. These were not normal characters at all. These were not human beings. And as he looked back to them, they were kind of leaping, somewhat like leopards, at tremendous speed, running, but their feet appeared to be slightly above the ground. I'm not going to say hovering, because it was not in a stationary position. These were all moving at speed away from him towards the, and probably into, because we have been back and we've discovered what we believe to be one of the tracks of one of these beings, and heading directly to the Mayan crop design. But just before they got to it, he said they melted away. And that does bear out with the one track that we discovered. We believe that two of these beings, kind of light beings, were actually in the tractor tire marks that had sowed the seeds. So there were no tracks for them to leave. This is what we believe. And you'll see the tractor tire marks in the sketch on the internet page, on your internet page. And what we found as far as this one track was concerned is that indeed the plants were bent over, heading away from the police officer, and suddenly just disappears. The track stops, and the plants are perfectly normal. And so it does appear that they melted away. Well, very briefly here, what then happened is that Andrew Russell, who's a researcher in England, who is actually the only researcher the police officer will talk to directly, and that is respected. He's in a very difficult position. This man has other police officers under him. His word has been accepted over all of the years in the police force that have been responsible. And, in other words, his honesty has been accepted in a court of law that has put people in prison. And here we now have, the following day, a police officer who is talking about light beings that disappeared in front of his very eyes. He traveled home in shock. There is what appears to be a delay, in other words, the usual time that it takes to get from that place to his home, which I'm not able to reveal, of course, took longer than it should have done. And other things have now followed, and this is ongoing. I'm getting reports every so often from Andrew that further events are continuing to take place. Very briefly to say, I hope I'm not giving you the replies that are too long. I don't want to stop other people coming in on this. I will conclude this piece by saying that just a few weeks ago now, he and his wife were asleep, and suddenly he was woken by his wife screaming, and she had woken to see three light beings in their bedroom. And the police officer's immediate reaction was to push the sheets back and to stretch out at them. And it was just an immediate response of thinking they were going to harm his wife. And the moment that he did that, they started to fade out, like turning off a very bright lamp in a dark room that you can watch then, like a television set sometimes, where it takes a few seconds to fade right out to black. But these three beings took round about a minute to fade completely out. The carpets were not burnt, but scorched where they were stood. And those fibers have now been analyzed by one laboratory. We have other analysis to be done. But a very unusual thing has been discovered in the three placements of those beings, and that is mercury. It's very unexpected of all elements to find. But that's all we have to go on at this moment in time, is that there is a mercury where these individuals left this domain.
Wow.
May I interject? If to see the pictures that of these beings, the drawing that was done, go to starseedhotline.com/crop circles. You type that into your browser, you can see in it the slide 54 and slide 55 reference the story that you've just heard.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you. Should have said that.
That's quite all right.
Yeah, it's good to see the graphic because, of course, it takes you there. That is the actual field that these beings are in the graphic that has been drawn, but the actual field is a photograph taken from the very spot the police officer was stood. And where you see on slide 55, for those that are able through the internet, you will see a police officer stood where that police officer was looking at the being. So you get a real sense of what he was confronting that particular day. But I think, if I may, this kind of speaks to the time that we're in, because there's another event that should be mentioned here that just 7 days separated what we've just been talking about from another experience that this police officer and other police officers from his police station were involved in. Now, this is the dilemma that we now have for people in authority. 7 days separated what we've just been talking about from this one. And this one is where a farmer fires a loaded gun over the heads of researchers who are walking or attempting to walk into a crop circle in his field. And the police record, and we're back to the police again, they turn up, as they are not armed in Great Britain, as they are here in the United States. But this was an armed unit, a special armed unit that arrived, helicopter over the top, police dogs on the ground, and arresting this farmer for firing a loaded shotgun over the heads of the researchers. Well, this particular day, the police are saying what they have been saying now for some years, being prompted by the National Farmers Union and government officials, that all the crop circles are man-made. So that's the line that they take. The National Farmers Union got very anxious following this new development of farmers losing the control of themselves like that, and issued a statement. And the statement, again, saying that we know that all crop circles are man-made, that we've got to lessen, you know, reduce the heightened tensions here, and, you know, just let the farmers get on with their jobs. Now, can you imagine that the same police officers involved in that statement and taking that stance are then confronted with that one of their own, a police sergeant in control of the police station, having seen live light beings at the edge of and analyzing, it would seem, I missed that out of my description to you, the plants in a Mayan design. It's extraordinary, but this is the dilemma. These are the challenges of our time. People in position like that, who have been hard-headed and will say perhaps skeptical, are now being challenged. These are real events that are challenging authority. There are some of us, and I imagine that most of the following description would be people that are listening and involved in the academy discussion here this evening, people that who are somewhat further down the road, who are open and are in dialogue in some cases with where we are going. And so there is no question, this is a very special time that we are living in, and everything is changing.
Oh, yes. How about the government and you? Did they ever warn you about publishing anything? Did you have a run-in with the government at any crossroads?
Well, two situations that I would mention here. One, which I won't go too far in, but to give you a flavor of some of the things that have gone on, is that I was due to return to England from coming over to see Cynthia when we were courting before we got married. And one CIA and another analyst from the Pentagon arrived at my wife's parents' house where I was staying at that time with about an hour before I must leave for my aircraft, and asked me in their house to discuss with them crop circles that had appeared in Russia, what I knew about them, etc., etc. And out of that discussion, which was relatively brief but very pointed, it was suggested to me that I should not discuss the UFO in the same breath as crop circles, and that I should work through a scientist that I did finish up working with, but not through for any government reason, although they were indeed suggesting that I should. So there was a CIA involvement at that time, an interest in what I was up to and what I knew or didn't know. So, yes, that happened. And the more recent one really comes off of the back of the event that happened when I was 5 years old, which I've now discussed with you. I was in Washington, D.C. When I first stated, the very first time that I made that statement was less than 2 years ago. And I was going to be presenting, or and did present also at that event, that conference, some papers, some documents that related to my work with the British government when I was advising Margaret Thatcher's cabinet, the undersecretary, well, the Secretary of State for the Environment was on her cabinet, and that's who I was reporting to on two of my reports, and to the head of state, who was the Queen, and other well-known royal family. And I did this because it's a longer story, and it's very interesting, but I don't think it would take me too long to give you the whole story. But in brief, what happened was that the British government, since I left Great Britain, Ministry of Defence, attempted to rewrite history. Isn't that pretty common these days, you know, where we go to war and then reinvent the reason we go to war, etc., etc.? Well, they attempted to rewrite their involvement in the UFO and the crop circle phenomena, and they basically wrote themselves out of it. In other words, they had no interest, there was no national threat to national security. I knew that to be different because I was the guy that was supplying the reports. And when that was issued, it was actually a statement put together by the former head of the UFO project, Nick Pope, at the Ministry of Defence in London. I said to Nick, I knew him and do know him, and actually do like him. He's a very nice guy doing his job. And I said, you know, Nick, this is untrue. This is completely untrue. And we are entering a period of time now where the public must have, they must have the truth. Because the truth leads us to a different and a better place as our consciousness evolves. And so I want you to rewrite that, or I will publish all of my documentation to the head of state, to the prime minister, to the deputy prime minister, to all the members of parliament involved with this, the chief scientific advisor, the people I was involved with, the Queen, the Duke of Edinburgh, and all the rest. And that's exactly what I did. I didn't like it. It is not in my nature. I actually don't like confrontation at all. But I had given 2 years for that to happen in a fair and reasonable way. And it was very obvious that they were calling my bluff. I was out of the scene, they thought, and this is how it was going to be. Well, I put those on the internet and had a phone call from Great Britain from a person that it wouldn't be in my interest to name, but you may well know this person, and threatened me. I mean, told me that if this was not removed immediately from the internet and removed from the presentation in Washington, D.C., and or out of this discussion now, it counts for the same thing, action would be taken that I could never afford. And so I did remove that one document. I actually published a book with all of the documents except that one. And I have published it, but it blanked out certain names and certain comments, which they were afraid of getting in the public domain. It actually had been in the public domain for 2 weeks before they realized it. And now every day, they incidentally will be monitoring our discussion, of course, because every time I press a button on my computer to update my pages, which I have done for this discussion tonight, the very first link that comes in, and I have equipment here that tells me, is Whitehall in London. And so every single piece of information that leaves my office here is updated to the British government immediately. And probably other places too. So anyway, this is not making the discussion black, dark, and terrible. I have been on the air, a live radio program with Nick Pope, the former MOD, since that time, and there is now an acknowledgement. This is on the air, it's on my website, whilst I was on a BBC radio program fairly recently, have now acknowledged that my version of events is the real one. And so that is now put right. We are hopefully on the same page, and we're hopefully moving forward together.
Wow. Wow. Oh, gee, this is just an incredible interview, Colin. This is just...
Thank you.
It's just amazing what you have gone through with everything that you've been doing. and you're certainly a master storyteller. You know, it's like you have just the right words and to give us the right pictures in our minds to see what you have really gone through.
I know that you
said that you had something you wanted to release as an exclusive for us tonight. Is this the time to do it?
I can do it any time you like, Lavendar. It's any time you like. I am yours. So, actually, if I scroll down that page.
Before we open up that topic, are there any other of these photos here that I've put up on the starseedhotline.com/crop circle page that that you would like to comment on?
That's a very good point, and perhaps if I scroll from top to bottom, and I will be brief because there are whole presentations, you know, with every one of these, but this will give you some reason to understand why it is, excuse me, for the last 10 years of the last 30 that I've not been looking closely at the separation of what is real, that we cannot place the circle maker to, versus those that we do know are made by people. That isn't where the last 10 years has been, and the reasons is what I'm about to show you now on the page that Ariel has put together. 29, if we start at the top there, I try not to make it too directly off the screen because I guess there will be people listening that are not having the advantage of looking at the photographs. But so what happened is in 1988, the circle with two rings that you will see on the screen appeared at a place called Longstock, just south of my town. Well, our team went, we investigated, we did all the things that we usually did, which was basically over a number of years gathering data and looking for correlations in that data, comparing them with other countries, etc. Well, I was by this time in a very troubled marriage, and I was alone this particular night. I had come back from that circle that you're looking at with the two rings, and I guess I prayed. I don't know whether the prayer is quite the word or meditated, but I went inside of myself, finding quiet space, trying to sort out where I was in my life, you know, being pulled in one direction with this mystery, and being appearing to be interacted with also as I was traveling this path. And so I was there, and I said in my head, I said, please, could you provide, manufacture, make, produce this design, which I have formed in my head. It was nowhere else. It wasn't, I didn't draw it. I had my eyes closed. And I tried to think of a design that had never been seen on the planet before, according to our data. And that's what I did. And I formed this, I got this Celtic cross in my head, the five circles that I had discovered in 83 that started me on this, but connecting the outer ring, the four outer circles with a ring. There's a traditional Celtic cross. And the next day, I just had woken, and the telephone was going. The farmer called Jeff Smith is on the telephone saying, I know you were at the circle yesterday, Colin, you know, with the two rings in our field. We've just come across another one. And they're harvesting. You can see in the photograph, for those of you who are looking at the internet now, you will see where they were harvesting. And he could see that not only did he have the circle with the two rings that we had left and had done all of our work in, a new one had arrived. And so he said, but you're going to have to be very quick because we've got rain coming and we're already in the field harvesting. So I got Busty Taylor, the light aircraft pilot. We got an aircraft nearby. He flew it, and I'm taking photographs. The photograph that you see there, which formed the very first book in 89, Circular Evidence. And I tell you, the lump that came into my throat when I looked down from that aircraft, it was the very pattern that I had asked for that night. But what we didn't realize for a couple of weeks, you know, at the end of a very busy season, was the boundary of the field that you will see in that photograph was indeed the very boundary, as close to my home as possible, which was 2 miles further north, that had vegetation capable of producing the the effects you're looking at. In other words, it was the last field to be harvested in that area. So the two parts of that request in my head were, could you make this as close to my home as possible? Both elements were fulfilled. The design appeared as close to my home as possible. Now, that the odds of it happening are just beyond belief. But then head down, and I'll put one to, after the other fairly quickly, so you can see that what we've got here is an experimentation with humanity. This is the connection of another intelligence, albeit a subpart of our own, with us, is playing out in the materialization and the dematerialization in some instances of our environment. And so we come to the next slide, which is, I think, where are we numbering, above or below? That's above. So this is now slide 38 as you're looking at it on the screen. There's a gentleman, and some of these people might be listening because you know this program is known to have been coming up. So Tai Chi instructor Graham Pritchard is actually a very nice guy. I've got to know Graham. I didn't used to know him, of course. And he decided that he was going to make a very large Flower of Life design with his brother. And they would do this because you can see the bend from where he comes from. He wanted to experiment with geometries and see whether he could produce certain effects, etc. He had his own reasons for doing this. But this particular night, in July 2003, 26th, his younger brother was ill, not particularly badly so, but he was not well, and they didn't feel up to doing this. But that night, in the same field that they had planned to do it, was that design, the same design. If you look below the photograph, you will see exactly that design. That is it. In the field, very, very large, larger than they had planned to make it, but that was the design, in the same field, the same night. What's the chances? And then head down again. So the next slide. This is 6th of July, 1995. Two people, now this will not taste very palatable to some, perhaps, of our listeners, but I'll give you the reasons why this was done later. It was considered that we, at this stage in the research, we should now be blind testing the analysis. And so where we have a scientist, of which there was one in this country, was analyzing the plants and finding certain things with them, that's all well and good, but we needed to know how solid that data was. If you had changes at the cellular level in the plants that were real versus those are not present in the hoax, then of course we had a very important discovery. So they went out and they made what you're looking at. They put a large circle with a smaller one nearby, and they put a path, a looping pathway between the two. Now, that was placed in that field randomly. You know, they knew which field they were going to put it in. I did not know this was going to happen. I knew the next day when they told me that I might get media calls and should know, as a friend of theirs, that this actually was man-made. And I thought it was good of them to let me know rather than make myself, put myself in a vulnerable position. But this is what happened. They had their own shock to come, because what was discovered when the aircraft then went up to photograph what they had made, something else had arrived. And you'll see here, this is now beginning to get confirmation coming from the most bizarre, we could say a paranormal or extraterrestrial or the spirit world, a consistent geometry. Now, I was told, as we have already spoken about, what was conveyed to me through my alarm systems going off, here's the same information. They put into that field two circles connected by the looping pathway. The next day, aerial photograph picks up the green, which is the chlorophyll in the plants, has been removed from the plants, not once, but twice, forming a perfect equilateral triangle with what they made. And so now we have the geometry confirmed again. And then something that, you know, my wife is in the house where I'm talking to you now, and I think is probably listening upstairs as we speak. And I say that again for a reason, because sometimes you feel when you're giving this kind of information out, it needs another voice, because it's like, if you cannot trust me, then, you know, and I fall on one description, then I fall on them all. And so I will often say, when it involves other people, you know, speak to this yourself, or I will tell the, give the description and ask other people to confirm it. And so what I'm about to tell you now is, has prompted a chapter in a new book which is coming, not by me, but by my wife. It's called The Path of Energy. That, of course, appears to be a plug. But for those who want to see this through, it's going to be important, because this is what happened one night when we both had an experience not so totally dissimilar, but what the policeman and his wife had. This is slide, I believe I'm right in saying slide 48. And
right.
This is what happened. Yes, in 1994, my wife and I were asleep at Cynthia's mum's place in Branford in Connecticut. It's just 10 miles away from where I'm speaking to you now. We were looking for a home. We didn't have a home. We were both in our second marriages. And we were asleep. And suddenly, my eyes opened. And it wasn't, I was not conscious of where of why my eyes opened. It wasn't as if there was a sound or something had happened, like a rumble of thunder or something. My eyes opened and I couldn't move. I was just simply frozen to the bed. And I had this amazing download of pure information. I can only describe it that way. I had a video playback in front of my eyes, which was in my head, and the pins on the wall and the alarms that I were telling you about earlier, all of this was happening in awakened state during this night, and it was coming down. I was seeing all the pins going in the map. It was forming the equilateral triangle, and it was showing on the map, and it's the same geometry. And then it's like, what is this pointing to me to? Sorry, please excuse me a second. It's what it gave me was the equilateral triangle of three ancient towns of Wantage, Winchester, and Warminster in England. But it also gave me that the exact halfway point, the center of the baseline, drawn vertically to connect with the apex up in Wantage to the north, ran precisely through that very important ratio that makes the equilateral triangle something very different and very powerful, was Stonehenge. It is exactly where the placement of the largest concentration of these circles, man-made and real, that's important to say, are forming in this one area, forming an equilateral triangle, and focused upon this geometry that you're looking at is the ratio placing Stonehenge into this equation. Well, what happened then is I was telling Lavandar this a couple of days ago when we were talking, was that it was a very odd feeling, because if you turn a dimmer switch down and you see the light dim down and then out, in energetic terms, that's how it felt during that experience. It was like I was connected to purity in a way I cannot describe. The information was so phenomenal. I felt as I had to sit up and I had to get a paper and a pen and I had to record this before my mind dropped the details out. But I felt that the information, the connection with that source, was being dimmed down, and it slowly fading, and it's gone. And now I felt different, and I looked to my right, and my wife's eyes are open, and she is not moving. And this went on, I've always said, I estimated about 2 minutes. It might have been a little longer, it's very hard to say, but then Cynthia, I said nothing. I could see that something was happening to her, and she looked at me. It's after about 2 minutes or so. She said, "What just happened? What just happened to you?" I said, "Tell me, what just happened to you?" And she said, I've just had this equilateral triangle. I said, that's what I just had. She said, but mine's told me about healing the human body by using the ratios of the equilateral triangle and a certain ratio, which is into the solar plexus from the base, and down to the third eye and the heart chakra from the top, from the sixth sense third eye placement. And she was like, I could not, we could, neither of us could believe it. We put the light on, we sat up, we made notes, and for years that has troubled us considerably. And as the years now have progressed, there's been this reinforcement of that geometry that you can see. Cynthia's side of this is in slide 50, and which is now, incidentally, it's gone through readings. It's being published as we speak. I think you know Danian also, Lavandar. Danian and Catherine Brinkley. Danian has looked at this book and is blown away by it, as is others, like, you know, Edgar Mitchell has some very strong words to say about it, and Greg Braden and others. So I think I really truly think we are onto something.
Yeah, yes, you are onto something, and it's a wonderful something for especially those of us that are starseed and ready to, you know, to gear up and do the work on the planet. And this is just another roadmap and another piece of the tapestry of the story that we all are going to be following. So are we through with that page? I'm not in front of a computer, so I'm not going along with, I don't have the computer in front of me.
I think,
so are we through with that page?
I think we probably ought to be, only on timing-wise, because if we select the next
Let me ask you this. On that page, do you have Milk Hill design?
Yeah.
From June?
Yes, we do. The one that you're wanting, that you're very interested in. The 2009
yes, the
Milk Hill.
Yeah,
yes,
right.
It's there.
The second one to the bottom, almost all the way to the bottom, just above Colin's DVD, is the Milk Hill crop circle.
Right. This is the one that got my attention. This is the one that really, when I saw it, I just immediately knew that this was a major code, and that it has some astronomical design to it, with a new moon on June 1st, 2011. So can you tell us what you think about this?
Yes. It is very different to anything that we've seen before. That's the first thing to say. I think there are two things. One that is very has been being kept somewhat out of the public's eye. That, you know, I've been hate to sound melodramatic, but certainly have been authorized to show you something tonight that has not been seen by anybody at all. And even though some of this made international news 2 weeks ago, we'll get to that in a second. But the first piece of work that has been done in a kind of scientifically reasoned interpretation of that design was by Dr. Horace Drew. He's a very well-known, very well-established scientist from Cambridge University in England. That's at least where he got his PhD. He is the guy that he was the very first scientist to resolve by X-ray resolution the DNA. So he's kind of really there as a scientist. Well, he's looked at that design, and the detail I think I probably is too complicated to talk about over the radio. But yes, he's come to the conclusion that there may well be a new something to be seen in the astronomy of that day, June 1, 2011. It's been deciphered by the different alignments, and I think it's probably easier to leave it there as far as that particular work is concerned. But there's been another development, which is, and please stop me, Lavandar, if you want to come in on that, because there's a kind of a separate situation that's come about, which is quite extraordinary. Which I could
just take it away. Just go with it.
Okay. Well, what's happened is this. For a year, I have been asked to keep to myself a discovery in Jordan of the lead codices that was made public 2 weeks ago and has hit the international news. I'm sure a lot of the listeners will have seen this. It came into the news fairly big 2 weeks ago and then kind of disappeared. Well, what it amounts to is that these lead books are thought by some of those researching them to be the most significant discovery since the Dead Sea Scrolls. These are lead codices discovered in Jordan, of which, according to the official media story, is that there are 70 of these. My information through one of the co-owners is a Bedouin in the Middle East, is that actually there are a few less than that, but they're very amazing. These are probably about, certainly the current analysis takes them about 2,000 years old. They have glyphs on them. And I attended a secret meeting at the time with David Elkington, who heads the investigation into this, a British investigation into this. He's qualified to do that work, and so that's something that is being left with him. He's a scholar, ancient religious history and archaeology. Excuse me. But what I've been sent is some material that has not been made public. In fact, this program tonight is the first time it's been spoken of and or seen. These photographs had to receive the specific authority of the owners of these books, and that also is incidentally secret. It's a very sensitive situation because the government of Jordan have said that they will do whatever it takes to have these codices returned from Israel into Jordan. So there are political as well as religious as well as other implications with this discovery. You can imagine what this might mean to our belief structure of Christianity, etc., depending upon what they say, what it is they record. Well, there are three basic elements in the design, the crop design, that appeared in 2009. Four elements, will be seen on the screen that you have in front of you for those looking at it on the internet. On the left-hand side, there's a Celtic cross, much like the one that I've had a personal kind of connection with. That appeared in that crop design at the very head end of it. It was the first part of a very complex design stretching over hundreds of feet. Well, that appears also in pages that were only just recently unsealed in the sealed codices. Then you have the second element, which is, it's there for those that are looking at it on the screen. It's now the second element.
Can we give that address one more
Certainly.
Time, please?
Certainly.
It's go to www.colinandrews.net/special-page, and you can see what he's talking about. Thank you.
Thank you. So you the second piece looks somewhat like the menorah. It has these five arcing arcs that are coming out from the front, the front of the design. I'm sorry, it's been a long week. So it connects the first element now with the second. That second element with the circles overlaying those arcs is also in the book, in these books, in the codices. And then you have the blocks, those three blocks with two above them and another one above that. That too is element three in the codices. And then, to me, as an electrical engineer, I look at this whole conglomerate of symbols that speak to me as an engineer, as a circuit, as a means of utilizing energy to execute a particular function. But we don't understand, as far as our own electronic symbols are concerned, of course, we don't understand what those are. It's not as if we've been given a circuit which we will just attach a generator or a battery to, and something will happen. But the primary elements that repeat in that script or that circuit, again, are in the codices that have been discovered in Jordan. Now, I'm not in a position tonight for sure. This is the very early stages of not only coming to terms with a very important discovery, but the research is still to be done in very difficult political environment. I'm limited, obviously, not only for what I know, but for what I can say about what I know. It has been very, very delicate. Because I knew after the discussion that Lavendar and I had that she had herself already jumped on this design as meaning something to her of some significance, and me knowing that it may well be that that's the case, I felt that I should make an extra effort to see if I could make certainly place in the public domain, opening another avenue of investigation tonight. And so that's really pretty well as much as I can say about it, other than I should say this too, that we do not have conclusive evidence that that design is either real or made by people. I have to say that because that is the case. I don't have conclusive evidence of either. It could be, of course, it could be that it was placed there by people. I would encourage anybody pursuing this research to begin refocus more upon the entirety that you're looking at in the fields, whether or not they're made by people. There's very good reason for saying that, because people involved in this mystery are indeed involved in bigger ways, I think, than they are aware of. So I think it's the safe way to run forward with this now, and it certainly it lessens the amount of aggravation between the different schools and camps, between the people making them and researching them and the farming community, is that we have something happening. This is a time of change. This phenomena is giving us a unique insight in the evolution of a new phenomenon where it begins to interact with people, where people begin to deceive others, as they have done in politics and in religion and in business, and have brought us to the precipice of which we stand today. And so we must learn at every single facet of this one phenomena to really understand what it is we should be doing together, literally together, on the same page, to move forward, and at the end of the day, of course, to provide hope and encouragement for our children, and to fall out over this tremendous discovery of, you know, at the 11th hour on our planet is not going to bode well for us.
Wow, that's just an incredible, incredible discovery that's been made. And as you were talking, I could almost see the people that were making them man-made, and yet something was maybe directing them to make them. So they probably don't know what's running through them as they make these designs. I could see that as you were talking. I'm looking at the time, Arielle. I think it's time maybe to open up the lines for questions. And I think our Miss Catherine might be on the line. Is she still there?
I believe so. I would just like to ask Colin one little question. In this Milk Hill, there was a series of crop circles. There is one little circle that I was reading on the other website, that they're speculating that it has something to do with Planet X. Do you know anything about
that? Yes, but it really not very much more than you have said yourself, that, that there is speculation as to what this new object is going to be. According to the alignments, it is strongly suggestive that there's something else that's coming in that is not there in the normal software that allows us to see which alignments are going to be there on certain dates. There is here in the crop design indication of one new component. So that's the speculation, and of course we often get back to wondering about Planet X, or indeed comets that may well just kind of head our way in short order. I really don't know very much more than that. That's as much as I know about it.
Okay. Well, let's bring on Catherine Brinkley.
Hello. Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Catherine.
What? Hello, everyone. Colin, Lavendar, Ariel, I want to congratulate you on a most unbelievable program.
Oh, thank you.
This was fascinating beyond words. And there's just one question that I wanted to ask, Colin. For those people who perhaps are just awakening to the crop circles, I know there's been over 30,000 of them. Is that correct? Since like 83 or 70?
It's getting up that way, Catherine. I mean, I've looked myself in, I've estimated about 2,500. We had 13,000 kind of right up on the screen that had been, you know, we had enough data to put them in a confident manner. And that was several years ago. So it's probably in that order.
So in your opinion, Colin, what is the general meaning of the crop circles in an overview? Why do you think they are appearing, and what are they trying to teach us? I know everyone has an individual meaning through the sacred geometry, but overall, why are they appearing at this time?
It's a great question, and of course, it is the most important. You know, when you've sifted through all of the data, all of the personal experiences that individuals have had, the paranormal interactions, I'm saying paranormal, I don't know what else to say, you're left with exactly that question. And what I believe is this, and it's based upon a whole gambit of reasons, and I can bring those forward if there's time. I believe this, that this is really where 2012 also comes into the equation. It kind of stands out there as a separate subject because it's made to appear that way. You know, the movie put it forward as being a horrible, terrible situation, end of the world, you know, so that it's drawn up this for and against, good and bad situation. So it stands out there as a separate entity, whilst in fact, of course, it represents the period of time we live in. And in researching, I think you know that Cynthia and I wrote the book, 2012 book, for the Complete Idiot's Guide series. And it is a basic, but it's nonetheless, we researched it with the elders, with the scientists, with NASA and other people. They've all been involved. And we try to get it so that it was fair, it was not alarmist, and that it recorded what the Mayan themselves felt about the period. And so it really dovetails into exactly what we've got out the crop designs, from the early astronomical designs that led us along the pathway, teaching us a little more each step of the way. We then finished up in the early 90s with the solar system design, which we've got on the special page on the internet right now for those that have it on their screen. You'll see there the design, which gave us a lot of information. And that information, too, feeds right in to the multi-faceted messages that all agree. And they all agree here that we are entering a period of time at the end of one major cycle that the Mayan were so right on with. I'm totally with them on this one. They were scholars of extraordinary magnitude. And, you know, as I say, maybe for another program we could talk about that. There's a lot in there. But what they highlighted was that heading beyond 2012 up to the period 2033, where the crop circle of the solar system, an extraordinary replica of our solar system, was looked at by astrophysicists and astronomers working with us, showed one thing. It showed that in the year 2033, in September, year 2033, the planet was missing on its orbit. Now, planet Earth was missing off of its orbit. It raised questions, but it makes sense in the sense that if we are not, this would be my way of putting it, if we are not in a coherence, the important word there is if we're not in other words, in total agreement and in resonance, in a coherence of love, by that time, we will have lost our opportunity to head out onto that cycle, which will go whether we're on it or not. It's a cycle of life. At the highest level, from the major macro, it's going to happen anyway. What we're looking at now is, of course, the decoupling of all of the infrastructure. That is why the economy is falling to pieces, as why the religious elements are now fighting one another, why the multinationals are falling out with one another, why within each and every subject, and in many cases within families, these differences are coming to the forefront. It's all cyclical. It's the decoupling. And what I think is magical about it, Catherine, is that it is giving us a very powerful force of an opportunity. It's giving us an opportunity to change. And everything that I've seen, every experience I've had speaks the same thing. It says we are now living right there. We are at 10 seconds to midnight. We are beyond the threshold. There's no going back. We make this or we break this. It is within our grasp as long as we resolve the fact that we must arrive on the same page in a complete coherence of love. And sometimes I find, as a male myself, I do find that many men find the word, let alone the experience and the understanding of the experience of love, somewhat difficult to even speak, let alone experience and be. But that is the period that we're coming from. The egos, the uniform mentality, the group mentality that men so have in the past so fallen into, the militaristic, all of these elements, these features, these qualities is the word I'm looking for, come from the past. So I'm sorry that was a long answer, but that's the best I can give you is what they're saying, what they are all saying is love, love, love. And we've got to find it. We've got to get there.
We've got to get there. I can't tell you that answer was more magnificent than anything I could have dreamed of, and I'm absolutely in tears here. Do you believe in your heart that we will make it?
I do, Catherine, and one of the reasons that I say it is that I do quite a lot of presenting, as I think you and Danian do too, to children, and they're getting it. There's something happening. The children are getting it. They are ahead of the adults. They are there. They are taking this on themselves. You know, they truly are. They're stepping forward. They're pushing. They're in behind us. They're sweeping us forward. And I do hope they maintain it. Yes, I do. I have every confidence that I would say this, being ruthlessly honest, if that's quite the right terminology here, I do feel that we are now right here and about to experience probably 2 years or so of extreme difficulty. There's going to be difficulty because our infrastructure is not there. Our anchors are gone. Many of our mums and dads and our elders are finding it difficult to come to terms with the new experiences, the new world around them. It's falling apart, and that's scary. That's worrying to them. But for me, there's something inside of me that says, thank God it's happening. I mean, we could not continue on this deceptive, this deceitful, this dishonest ruthless world. We could not continue like this. It was always going to collapse. And so this is the opportunity from the difficulty and the hardship, with the love and understanding, is coming in a hurry. The Middle East right now is like nobody anywhere on our planet or our forefathers have ever experienced. And, you know, with a little luck and with a little bit more love, we're going to see some tremendous changes for the better in our time.
I so agree with that, and I know that these times are frightening, like you say, and for so many people,
yeah.
The world is dissolving around them that they've always known, and it's frightening. But instead of going to fear, I think it's important that all of us realize the old must be washed away in order
yeah.
for the new world to be born, and that world will be anchored in love. And I know that Daniel wants to say hello to you. He's not missed a moment of this program, and he's so excited to say hi. Go ahead, honey.
Hi, Colin.
Oh, thanks, Catherine. Hello, Daniel. Very nice to know you're there listening, my friend.
Well, it's
thank
but
you.
It's nice. We appreciate you so much. And I was talking to Lavendar earlier today about how through the years we have been friends, and I made a lot of fun of things I now know that are exactly real and true. So I apologize
yeah.
for that. And
not
the other point
all.
Of it is, the other point is, I'd like to tell you that the book that the two of you have just written, That Lovely Wife, I think it's going to really help people stabilize where they are and really get a good grip on which ways to go in their own healing energy path. And I hope to see you in July in England.
That's right, for our
I will see
tour.
You there. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for all of your support, Danny, and for your work and your honesty and the way you've been so outspoken on all of these subjects over the years that we've known one another. I do sincerely thank you.
I thank you, and we're doing our best. We have to help people see that their inner spiritual self is the place to seat their power instead of this external nonsense. And
yeah,
you're contributing
absolutely.
To that, and Kat and I are doing our best. I love
thank
you and
you
appreciate
so much.
You, and anytime we can ever do something for you, please call upon us.
Thank you, Danny, and we will see you in England.
This
love
is
you,
Lavendar.
Colin.
Catherine, would you give
thank you, Catherine.
Your website for people that maybe want to come and be with you on your tour in July?
Well, after listening to Colin on this program, I hope everyone in the listening audience is going to join us in July. That's July 17th through the 30th of this coming year, and they can get all the information they need at www.daniion.com.
Okay,
thank
great.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in, Catherine and Daniel.
Okay. Bye.
See you there. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that was a lovely surprise, I have to say.
Lavendar, I just want everyone to know that the switchboard is really full, and we're going to take a few more questions, but we've got 18 minutes left, boys and girls. I'm going to check in with the chat room here and talk to Sierra. Hello, Sierra.
Hello.
How are things in the chat room?
Oh, they're great. Wow, what an amazing show. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here and making all this happen. It's just been amazing. We do have a couple of questions. Actually, just one, because one of the questions was answered. So there's been a lot of debunking, Colin, in the last couple of months about crop circles. And a listener wants to know, how can one defend the idea of real crop formation?
Well, I've traveled the world looking at that very question. Although the last 10 years has been very, very focused upon the interaction and the consciousness side of it, what you're looking at is this. First of all, to say that the designs appear from the simple to the relatively more complex in a whole array of vegetation. Some vegetation is easier to do the detective work in than others. You know, I've been to Japan and Taiwan where these appear in the rice paddy fields. And when that happens, of course, you're given an opportunity to discover more than you would on a flat, hard plain like a wheat field, because you would sink in making one in a paddy field. And so, you know, you pick the data, the information up in different ways in different places. But what you're basically looking at is this. You're looking at looking very, very closely at the places where some kind of presence has to be achieved. In other words, if you're forming a circle, at some point you have to stand at the center of it. And if you're making other arcs and other geometries and alignments from those geometries to others nearby, and you know, these more complex designs like the one we've just been talking about, it's like an electronic circuit, you have to place yourself and construction tools in certain places. And so when you do that and you find that there's no pressure point, no changes or no damage to the plants, no changes at their cellular anatomic level, if you find there is, there are no deviations in the magnetic field, that everything looks as if it's been set about in a human kind of fashion, you take that information and then elevate yourself into an aircraft and take then the overlay from above, and you match the two together. And what comes together when they're made by people is that you agree, you kind of compare the two overlays, and you can see the actual dimension of the construction tool that they've used to make those that are made by people. And so that's a very broad, very brief, broad brush approach. But those that are, we cannot decipher, in other words, we simply cannot find how or who has made them, and therefore we say they are real. These are those where there is no pressure, there is no damage, there are changes at the cellular level where the Earth's magnetic field is increasing in its intensity, its magnetic force, up to about 300%. So that's 300% above the normal Earth's magnetic field, and that the patterning of that increase takes on the approximate design, that is, the magnetic signature takes on the approximate design of the physical creation in the field. And these that I'm talking about now, those that are real, tend to be, now this is not always the case, but they tend to be more simple. That sounds counterintuitive, but that tends to be the way it is. The more simple the designs, the religious, spiritual designs, Celtic crosses and so on, are those that fall into this 20% or so that we cannot decipher as being made by people. In other words, are real. And I would just say, because this becomes sometimes a very, can become an odd discussion when I'm sometimes taken on by skeptics and other researchers who believe everything out there is real, it becomes kind of strange, because I'm the person, and I'm not plugging myself, but it's just a fact, I am the person that coined the term crop circle. It came out of my mouth, and that's where it came from. So I'm the guy that at the time knew what it was I was describing. And so when I'm saying that's what I call a crop circle, I don't think anybody's in a position to argue that's what I was doing at that time. What it has evolved into, of course, as with anything else, with all of the books that have come and all the television programs and all the interest, has been, as always is the case, man deceiving man and shooting himself in the foot. You know, this is all still part of it is the connector that between two worlds. It's the connector between that we've come from, that, and frankly, I've been disgusted at most of my life. A lot of the time, I don't feel that I belong to the planet. A lot of the time, I just wonder what in the world and how in the world we so disrespect one another. And bridged through this phenomenon and other new ones that are coming along into a whole new situation. So it's all here. Every part of humanity is in this one subject, and I've been honored to be part of it. It isn't without the fact that I've taken risks of course, in to do so. But this is where we are, and I'm very pleased to be here.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I think that that is just really, 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 really great, and I can take that into a lot of conversations that I've had with people around the crop circles. It just makes a lot of sense. So thank you for really wrapping that very nicely for us. Just one other comment real quick from a listener that lives in Ohio near the Great Serpent Mound and Miamisburg Mound. There's crop circles there. Are you familiar with those here in the States?
Yes, I am. Yes, I've got the aerial photographs. I've not done the groundwork on those myself, but I have got the details from people that have done it. They often do, and indeed, let me just say that they also did have the Celtic cross, the basic designs, those early building blocks near there too. And again, you have a spiritual center is where these things tend to be. I'd like to have said a little bit more there, but I think we're probably tight on time. But the religious centers, the spiritual centers, I think is an important part of this.
Oh, thank you so much for your time, Colin. That's all the questions we have from the chat room at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sarah, this is Lavendar. Do you have anything you want to talk about with the conference that he's going to be at in Albuquerque?
Absolutely. Thank you for a quick moment to do that. So both Lavendar and I are actually going to be going to the Wake Up Now conference in Albuquerque. And the dates of that is April 29th, 30th, and the 1st. That's a Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday. We're going to be at the conference. We're going to have a table at the conference from which we're going to be passing out information. We're going to be organizing any starseeds that show up there. And what we'd like to do is encourage all of our starseed to try to plan on making this trip. Also, Lavendar is going to be offering two one-hour readings for people, for starseeds there at the conference, two a day. And if you're interested in having these readings done, you'll need to go on Starseed Hotline and go ahead and book that ahead of time. She'll need to do your chart ahead of time and bring it with her, but it will be 1 hour that you can sit one-on-one with Lavendar Friday, Saturday, and or Sunday. So make sure you go on and schedule that. And we wanted to also have an area or some place where Starseed could talk about traveling, getting hotel rooms together. It's also two for one. It's usually $100 to get into the conference, but it's $50 for Starseed. Just mention that you heard about this conference on Starseed Hotline. That you go to wakeupnowconference.com and go ahead and register, and we'll see you there. I'm very excited about it.
And they would also have and Colin, you're going to be there on presenting on one or more nights?
I should be presenting on the Saturday, but I'll be there throughout the conference, yes.
Okay.
And
well,
I look forward to meeting everybody.
I think there are some things that are going to happen there that will have great significance beyond the conference. So,
yeah, everything's moving, isn't it? You know,
mm-hmm.
It's electric, as they say.
No
well,
doubt.
Since I talked to you on Sunday, I've been getting these downloads. It's like there's files in my head of all these crop circle pictures, and I'm wondering when they're going to stop. It just keeps happening. And one of the things that happened is I finally just decided, yes, I'm going to go to Albuquerque for this conference.
Oh, well, good on you. I thought when we were talking, you were saying that perhaps you weren't going to be able to make it, but I'm pleased you are, and I very much look forward to seeing you there.
Me too.
I was going to say, Sierra, is that it from the chat room from now? Because we only have a few minutes, and now we got a couple more callers that we can squeeze in here.
Absolutely. Go ahead. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Sierra. Okay. We have, okay, we're going to hear from Jen. Hello, Jen, you're on the air.
Hey, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hi, Jen.
Perfect. Hi, Colin, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Jen.
Fantastic. I know we're tight on time, so I wanted to ask a quick question. Back in 1997, me and a group of friends went on a camping trip. And during that camping trip, we were led to do a meditation, and I started getting all of this imagery in basically placement and what we were supposed to do, et cetera. And I am leading to a crop circle, by the way. At the end of the meditation, all I know is that I was embedded with some very, very important information that I have yet to access. Come to find out, when we came back from the camping trip, I had made a drawing of the image that was given to me that we were supposed to humanly form in order to make this meditation thing come to life. And the image a friend of mine found on the web was the Barbary Castle 1991 crop circle.
Ha, ha, ha. Yeah.
And what we did, each person represented a piece and a point of the outside of that pyramid, and received and sent information. And I can tell you, we know for a fact that we had at least 6 hours of missing time.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Yeah, well, you're right, right in. This when anybody says to me equilateral triangle, and Barbary Castle in particular, has never been claimed. It had everything going for it as being highly mysterious. The field itself has produced many very extraordinary patterns below an Iron Age hill fort, a spiritual center. Would you be going to the conference? I think what you're just saying is very interesting. I'd be interested to know more.
I'm not sure, but I would love to talk to you about this, because this information that has been embedded in my body and what this did to my friends over the course of the years has been something that I have been seeking desperately. I mean, the fact that you're on tonight, and the fact that I just had this conversation again last night in desperation to find somebody who can provide me some answers, I would love to talk to you. I know that I'm also supposed to meet with somebody, a fellow hypnotherapist, who's going to regress me to figure out what in the world happened.
Very interesting. Well, yours, actually, I'm prickling as I'm speaking to you, so there's
me
something
too
going on here. Yeah, what I would encourage you, Jen, if you would, is to go in through the contact button on my website. You know, they're throughout the website there, and that will come straight onto my computer, and we can set up a dialogue. I'd certainly be very interested to know what is going on there. I think there's another story to be told here for sure.
Well, thank you so much. And, guys, I can't tell you how on time this was and how special this was for me personally this evening. So thank you so, so much.
Thanks for checking in there, Jen.
You're welcome, Jen. We have time for one more quick question, and then we're going to be wrapping it up.
We have three minutes.
Mel, you are on the air with 3 minutes, and please only take two of them.
I will. Thank you, Lavender and Ariel, and thank you, Colin. I have myself been researching crop circles for 3 years. I also saw them in visions, and I just want to say it's a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you so much for sharing the truth. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, Mel. Thank you so much. It's always heartening to have that kind of support. Thank you.
You're very welcome, and God bless you all. Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you, Mel.
You're welcome.
Very expediently done. So, Lavender, we're going to wrap up now. Lavender.
I'm here. I'm here wrapping.
Oh. Well, I was giving you an opportunity to
I'll see you, Colin, in Albuquerque. I hope others will be able to join us there. This is going to be kind of a starseed gathering for those that, you know, want to take the opportunity to come to Albuquerque for the Wake Up Now conference. So I just hope that we have the chance to speak again when we're there. And thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and sharing with us. I'm sure that we're going to have a lot of questions, and a lot of people want to know more and more and more. So I know you're writing books, and I'm really anxious to see Cynthia's book. Now that I know that one's out, I really have got to get my hands on it. So
yeah,
I hope you bring an extra one with you when you come to Albuquerque.
Well, she will be presenting down there too, so we're going to have a good time.
good, and I want to meet her. So thank you again so much for sharing your experiences tonight.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
I think we're going to have Colin back at some point in the future.
Yes, and absolutely. You'll come back and see us again, right?
My pleasure. That will be my pleasure.
Thank you.
Great. And I do want to mention that, Colin, you are going to be taking that special page down from your website because of the sensitive nature of it.
Yes, yes. It's a hot potato more than I could possibly say. It truly is. It's almost like World War III going on behind the scenes.
We appreciate the quick peek at that, and I'm just saying that because when people listen to this show in the archives, they'll notice that the page will be gone. However, the page on Crop Circles on Starseed Hotline, which will be linked in our Vault of Knowledge, will be there for a long time for those to look at it.
And I will try to get that back up. I will try to get it back up. But for now, my agreement is that it will be taken down immediately. We're off air.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we are honored that we were able to see that and hear your talk tonight. Thank you so much, everyone. I want to thank everyone in the chat room for listening. Sierra and Purple Sage, thank you so much for the work that you do. Lavendar, we'll be back next week, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, bye-bye.
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 Thank you.
Bye, Colin.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. See you soon.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.